Let's sing about it now.
I saw Satan fall like lightning.
So good.
I saw darkness run for cover. But the miracle that I just can't get over, my name is registered in heaven. I believe in signs and wonders. I have resurrection power. Still the miracle that I just can't get over, my name is registered in heaven. My praise belongs to you forever. This is my testimony from death to life. 'Cause grace rewrote my story. I'll testify by Jesus Christ the righteous. I'm justified. This is my testimony. This is my testimony. Come together, sons and daughters, bought with blood and washed in water. Sing the praises of the Spirit, Son and Father, our God. We'll finish what he started. Our God will finish what he started. This is my testimony from death to life. 'Cause grace rewrote my story. I'll testify by Jesus Christ the righteous. I'm justified. This is my testimony. This is my testimony. I'm not dead, I'm not done. Greater things are still to come. Oh, I believe. If I'm not dead, you're not done. Greater things are still to come. Oh, I believe. If I'm not dead, you're not done. Greater things are still to come. Oh, I believe. If I'm not dead, you're not done. Greater things are still to come. Oh, I believe. This is my testimony from death to life. 'Cause grace rewrote my story. I'll testify by Jesus Christ the righteous. I'm justified. This is my testimony. This is my testimony from death to life. 'Cause grace rewrote my story. I'll testify by Jesus Christ the righteous. I'm justified. This is my testimony. This is my testimony.
Good morning, church. Good to see you guys. This way. You sound great. How's it been? Been a good week?
Yeah.
Students, did you guys do anything weird this week, or was it a pretty normal kind of deal for you? I just hear mumbling and blah, 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 blah. I don't know what you said. Well, I'm glad you're here. Would you do me a favor? There are people who have chosen to come and worship. They have been obedient to the call of Christ. We are in the house together. Would you just greet each other in Jesus' name? Go.
was buried beneath my shame. Who could carry that kind of weight? It was my tomb till I met you. I was breathing, but not alive. All my failures I tried to hide. It was my tomb till I met you. You call my name and I ran out of that grave. Out of the darkness into your glorious day. You call my name and I ran out of that grave. Out of the darkness to your glorious day.
Your mercy has saved my soul.
Now your mercy has saved my soul. And your freedom is all that I know. The old made new, Jesus, when I met you. You called my name
and I ran out of that grave.
Out of the darkness into your glorious day. You called my name. Out of the darkness into your glorious day. I needed rescue. My sin was heavy. Chains break at the weight of your glory. I needed shelter. I was an orphan. Now you call me a citizen of heaven. When I was broken, you were my healing. Your love is the air that I breathe.
I have a future, my eyes are open.
'Cause when you call my name, I ran out of that grave. Out of the darkness to your glorious day. You call my name and I ran out of that grave. Out of the darkness
to your glorious day.
You be seated. Richard Israel, how are you, man?
A little winded, but I'm good. I tell you, that's the perfect song to put in the set when we get back from camp, because we're jacked up as it is. We're going on fumes, but we bring everybody together. Hey, listen, this is the time of year that for years and years, because this is 40 years that I've done student ministry. Or so that, yes, I don't know if you should clap about that or not. It just means I never graduated to the adults, that's all. But it was taken for granted, I think, myself, that there was going to be youth camp every single summer. And last year, it didn't come off that way because of pandemic, COVID. Now, we still went on our own trip. We did our own thing because that's who we are. We're not going to be held up by a little pandemic. we did our own thing. But this year, we're excited about getting back to camp. And something funny happened in the planning of camp. Colleges started saying that they could not host because of the pandemic. So we originally were going somewhere else. We wanted to do a mission camp, which for our students. In our spiritual DNA at this church, and it's reflected in our student ministry as well, because you model it for them, is that we want to touch and change the world, our community. We do that in a variety of ways. But our students beg to go do a mission site. That's not the case with most student ministries. They're doing other things, rec, that's all cool, that's all good, but we just feel like, hey, look, we're going to make ourselves available for God. So normally we have kids ministry or senior adult ministry or something in coming in contact with others, and it just was not going to be possible this year that we were going to be able to have face-to-face contact with those kind of groups. So it was going to be a behind the scenes kind of thing. And what happened was, we started praying about it. I started talking to Student Life. They were struggling finding mission sites. And then they told us a week before we left, hey, we have this middle school, Oak Park Middle School in Leesburg, Florida, home of the Blue Knights. It's a new mascot that I've learned. Oh, Silver Knights, I'm sorry. Whatever. So we were going to go there. Didn't know what we were going to do, but we knew God was up to something. So we were able to go to that site, and I'll let the students talk about it. But God had us exactly in the right place at the right time, with the right people on campus for us to be able to minister, and I'll let them share that with you in just a second. But we ended up at Lake Yale with 500 other students. Lake Yale, if you're a Baptist, has all kinds of different thoughts in your head right now. You may have gone to Lake Yale in your life, as a matter of fact. It's outside of Leesburg. Now, your camp at Lake Yale may have been throw a stick in the fire and say, kumbaya. Or pass it on. Those kinds of experiences. But it's a little different now. But we ended up at Lake Yale. We had a fantastic speaker, which I'm going to have a student share with you about. And without me talking anymore, we're going to do just that, right? So if you're going to share this morning, come on up. No, yeah, you can come stand next for support. For support. All right, they need some courage.
Okay, so I'm Austin. This is my first summer, at least at your church. I've known Olivia Fennell for 5 years, though, and what I learned from camp was just like connecting the faces with the stories. For the 5 years, I've been hearing about like Max and Katie and Patrick and obviously Jake, her brother, but I've got to know them so well throughout this week and also as well as VBS, and I got to learn more about them and who they are and who they are in Christ, and I just thought that was, like, cool to get to know.
Well, hi. If you don't know me, I'm Katie. So this week, this week, like Mr. Richard was just saying, we went to a middle school. We went to Oak Park Middle. And we got there on the first day, and, like, the first thing the custodial lead, his name was Don, said to us was the one thing you never want to hear when you show up at a mission site, I'm not sure what to do with you. And so the first day was a lot of yard work, a lot of weeding, and we got to the point where we were doing things so fast that Don actually told us, slow down, please, I don't have enough work for you. And so the second day we got there, we really didn't know what was going to happen. And one of the office ladies, I believe she's the principal now, her name was Ms. Carmen, was like, well, I have...
Dr. Carmen.
Dr. Carmen. Sorry, I wasn't aware of the title. said, I have these binders for my students that all of them need. The teacher's assistants were supposed to do it at the end of last year, but they weren't able to. And so if you guys could do any of those, that'd be great. And there were 600 binders that we needed to finish for all these students. And we were finished with them and were able to do teacher stuff by the end of the last day. And I just remember Miss Carmen said to me, she was like, if you guys hadn't come, it would have been me and one other lady trying to get 600 binders and 50 teacher binders done by next Monday. And so they were awesome. They were so great. And they were like, you have to stay in contact with us. Like, please, you're close enough to drive down. So, yeah, it was a super cool mission site that we really didn't know God was going to do that with us at. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm Max. I'm pretty sure most of y'all know me by now. Hi. I've been going to Student Life Camp for, like, I think I've gone to, like, 5 of them now, which is a lot. And this has definitely easily been the most impactful one for me. The topic was Take Heart. And it was so interesting because I've gone to so many camps where they've just sort of been like, this is a true statement, but like God is so, like they just taught us about the goodness of God, which is very true. But this one was about weakness in a weird twist of topic. He talked about how we can hide, like we try to hide our weaknesses and hide behind our weaknesses, and it covers our relationship with God. And what God longs for is for us to give our weaknesses to him. And in return, he gives us our strength. And that really registered in my mind, because I love to hide weaknesses. But it was a really good reminder just to give everything to God. And in return, he's not going to judge you or say, oh, I told you so, Max, what are you doing? He's going to say, here's my strength and my grace and my love in return. So, yeah.
All right, thank you. Yeah, that was a cool week of worship, of celebration. Those binders, maybe you don't know what really went into that. That they have like school supplies for every student, and they just came in different sections, like a bag and pencils and highlighters, and you had to basically assemble these things. A cool thing. This is the way God works. We at this church have been putting together assembly lines for various things through our entire existence. If you've been to an egg hunt prep night, you know we stand around and put candy and all that kind of stuff in there. Little did I know that God was preparing us to be the best binder group known to man. We did 600 of those, and at the end of the binders, we would say, have a nice year. We prayed over those binders. The entire student body, 600, are going to get those, as well as the teachers having a packet that we also prayed over. So the cool thing is, even though we didn't have contact, we know that these binders are going to be used and be a reminder, hopefully, for those students that they've been touched and prayed for the year. So that was a really cool moment. I do want to say thank you to all the adults that went. You know, Wendy, Sarah, Jacinth, Tia, Joel, Scott, and I think that's it, right? Yeah. So
Patrick.
Oh, Patrick, our lit.
I'm here to help.
Patrick. He was our musical director for our own church time. He's a lit. If you don't know what a lit is, leader in training, right? That's what happens. So even when you graduate student ministry, a couple years later, you may show up as a lit. So it continues on. I want to thank you as our church family for allowing us to go, supporting us with your prayers. Kirk, I appreciate your texts every morning to the group. We read them out loud to the group each morning. So it truly is a church-wide event, and we want you to know that. We love you, and we want you to hold us accountable for things that we went through. Take heart, it says. That's Jesus' last words to the disciples when he was going to leave. That also means be courageous. that even though you may go through trials, he will be with you. In him, he will meet your needs. So thank you so much. Take heart. Let's continue worship. You're doing such a great job so far. Let's continue it.
You call my name, and I ran out of that grave, out of the darkness, into your glorious day. You call my name, and I ran out of that grave, out of your darkness, into your glorious day. Amen.
Oh, run the video, and then Jeff, you'll be up.
Sound of the wind, let the roar of I want to echo what Richard said. It was a exciting week for our kids. I had the opportunity to visit with them as well. And when Richard was talking about Lake Yale, one of the things that, again, if you've been a Baptist a long time, you may have been to that camp at some point. And we were riding over to the mission site that day on Thursday. I was riding with Richard, and we had some of the guys in the car, and we were talking, and somebody, and I don't remember who it was, said, Lake Yale's the nicest place we've ever been. And I was thinking to myself, what kind of dumps have we been taking these kids to? I looked at Richard. He just smiled and laughed. I'm like, wow, Lake Yale's really picked up over the last few years. But it was a great time, great camp. I did have the honor of hooking up with the kids and watching them at work on Thursday. And they were awesome. And I want you to know that as folks who are parents and relatives and then folks who are just dealing with them on a regular basis, our kids are fantastic. And so you guys represented so well. And exciting to be able to stand back and watch them do what they did. I said this morning at 9, I'll say it again, at 4:34 we're just built different. DNA has ministry in it, and our kids just stepped up and did a fantastic job. And so you can be very excited when they say the church has left the building and gone elsewhere and done some other stuff. They were doing it, and it was fun to watch. And so kudos to all of you, and again, the video doesn't begin to capture it. It was a fun day and fun day to watch them work. Now, today, because we knew we had so much going on, we got a lot going on here, we're going to continue our Welcome to the Jungle series and do a couple of other things, but there's some housekeeping that we need to take care of first, because today is the day that we said that we would actually officially name the boat. Now, the 9 o'clock crowd is really upset at me because they don't know what the name of the boat is yet. We left it covered the whole time, and we didn't even mention it. And even as they were leaving this morning, like, what's the name of the boat? What's the name of the boat? And we started this contest. It was one of those things where we, at the last minute, we realized we didn't have a name for the boat. And so the first Sunday of the series, when I got up and said, we're going to have a contest to name the boat, no one else in the room knew that we were having a contest until that moment. And so we started this contest. Well over 80 names were submitted. They were seen by a number of eyes. And the way that I did it, I would send the whole list out. It would get whittled down with top choices, come back. I re-edit the list. I send it out to other people. And so the list went around. I did not have a vote in this. And so I did not know until the last minute what the name was going to be. But it went through all of those processes. And I want you to know we had some creative names. You guys are good. And I appreciate it. We had folks from all ages join the contest. We promised a Jungle Cruise prize pack to the winner. Now, you might say, what is a Jungle Cruise prize pack? Because I know you are thinking it's just the stuff that we give away at other events and we just put all together in a bucket. But that's not true. We usually do that, but this was good stuff. We have a Jungle Cruise 3D diorama here, an official Jungle Cruise sticker, a pen, a magnet, a Jungle Cruise golden book, and the brand new Jungle Cruise adventure game, A Voyage of Mystery and Misfortune. And so all of that, yes. It makes some of you think, I should have entered a name. But I want to present the winner, even though we haven't unveiled it yet, I want to present the winner, but I can do this because there were a number of names that were submitted, and we said enter as often as you would like. And so one person came up with the name that just kind of bubbled to the top. And so I want to present the gift basket to them at this time, and I want you to applaud and go crazy. But the winner of the boat naming contest, it's our first ever, first annual, and probably last, is Lauren Stayer. Congratulations. Anything you'd like to say? Okay. All right. Now, Lauren submitted some names to us. Matt, if you'd help me out here. At the end, I'm going to cheat. Hold on, I'm going to take your chair. And so I have been instructed. Now, there was some construction that had to go on to insert this name. And so I was told that we needed to be very, very careful. But this is now the official name of the boat. We will unveil it. The boat is now hereby christened the Mighty Magoo. And so, as the founder, owner of And Matt had no idea what was under that, which is why I asked him to help. So I'm expecting social media presence to go through the roof. Matt will be delivering this to the Altamont Springs store, and when it's done, and we'll be sitting right out front, and so you can enjoy it for years to come. Mighty Magoo is the name of the boat on top of everything else, and so thank you. Matt, we'll make sure we get your picture in your boat before the day's over with. So, anyway, so that is that. That's the official boat. We're excited about that. Also, if you guys are like I am, I mean, I'm a little bleary-eyed, not because of the name of the boat, but because we are in that season where the Olympics are taking place. And so as the Olympics are unfolding, I've been finding myself, especially since track started, I'll watch every evening on USA and watch the track events live because they're halfway around the world, and so you can see them unfold live. And then when that's done, cut over to the NBC national feed to see the highlights of what I missed because I couldn't catch the rest of it. And so I've been watching the Olympics, and we said last week that we were going to make you a part of the Olympic experience. And you might be thinking to yourself, how do they do that? Well, today you're getting to participate in the second heat of the 434 Olympiad. The first heat took place at 9 o'clock. And so you are now the second group gets to do that, but you get to participate. It's going to be awesome. And so I hope you came in ready to play and ready to have a good time. The way that it works is this. If you give us an overhead shot here, this, if you don't know what this is a Tudor Electric track and field game. Now, you may say to yourself, I don't know what that is. Well, because they only made them for 2 years, 1962 and 1963. Tudor's a company that designed the electric football games, which are those games that vibrate and then the football men just run all over the place. And if you grew up in the 60s or 70s, you had one of those. That was long before video games existed. And so they were great fun. They made a lot of noise. They were fantastic. This game was made in 1962. This is an original 1962 version of the game. It sold for $5.44 in 1962, which was a lot of money in 62. We put the page out of the Sears catalog online for you this week, look at this week. But I found the guy who had one for sale, and I called him and I talked to him, and he promised me that it worked. And then I told him I'm a pastor, so don't lie to me. And he promised me that it worked. And I said, so you got to make sure. So this game is from 1960. It's 59 years old, but it works. And he goes, it works. It works just as good as new. Skeptically, I said, okay. Made arrangements to get it. Called Pete Deans, our electrician. Said, Pete, I'm going to get this toy. You're going to have to fix it. There's no way this thing's going to work. It's 59 years old. Sure enough, we opened it up, and it worked. And so today, you get to benefit from that because you get to participate in the Olympics. Because we are going to put four runners onto that course, and each one of those runners represents one of you, your section, if you will, and there are prizes to be had. And so what we've done is we've isolated all the athletes in the Olympic Village. And we have, this is a COVID-safe village. They've all been tested. They're fine. Nobody's going to be ill. Everybody's healthy, so nothing to worry about there. We've been keeping them there very, very safe. Just so you know, the bases have all been swapped around since 9 o'clock, so we have no idea if one is faster than the other. We have no idea who's going to do what. But I need someone from this section here. Here, I'm going to choose the birthday girl. Piper, come on up here. You need to pick a color, Piper. Which color?
White.
White, okay. Here's what I want you to do. Come on, take that. Come on over here. Come over here, track. I want you to pick one of these lanes here and just put it right behind that line, right there, facing this way. There you go. Okay. All right. Thank you. Now that's, so this will be the white section. And Piper's birthday is today. She is seven years old today. And so wish Piper a happy birthday today. And make sure. So this will be the white section. Okay. So when we start, you guys root for white, okay? You got it? All right. This section over here, Pete, since you were going to fix this for me, come over and pick a color, dude.
You changed the bases, though, so it's not fair anymore.
I know.
Just do it, Pete. I'll try blue again.
Blue? All right. Go ahead and put it on track. Pick a lane, any lane. Behind the line. Today. All right. He's got blue. This will be the blue section. Just a moment. You will get the yell for the blue section, cheer for the blue section. Okay, I'm going to go back over here. Markel, come on up here. You can't choose red. Oh, you can't choose red, I guess. I can't choose blue, can't choose white. But you can pick red or yellow.
I'll pick the yellow.
Okay. All right. Yellow one on the track. This is it. All right. That means you're the yellow section, so you'll be rooting for yellow, okay, in just a moment. Somebody from this section, Lauren, you're already an award winner. Yes. Colby, come on up. All right. You want red?
Yeah.
Good choice. All right. Colby, go ahead and put the red one. The last one's on the line. That means you guys will be the red section. In just a minute, when we hit go, you will cheer, you will holler, you will scream, and remember, and I will repeat this again, no parimutuel wagering, and there are prizes. No betting, no gambling, the prizes. Now, you also have to understand that if this thing works for 2 weeks like we want it to, that will be another minor miracle because it's 59 years old, all right? Let's go to the overhead shot so you can see. All right. There they are. Everybody remember their sections? Richard, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and stand up and you be the starter. And it's red. Is this y'all? All right. Because you've won, huh? I don't know. Because you have won, we have official gold medals for you. We had them shipped in from Tokyo just for today. So congratulations. Next week, maybe you can. We have a few more back here. You can try again, and we'll see what else we can come up with next week. All right, I think there's enough for everybody. If not, we'll get you a medal, I promise. All right. Now, that being said, today we're going to continue on with our series, but we're going to talk about strange sights and sounds. And I got to tell you, I'm an Olympic fan. I love the Olympics. I love that sporting event. It's great fun. I had the opportunity to go and watch in 96 when it was in Atlanta. Thought it was the greatest sports spectacle I've ever been to, and I've been to a lot of different events, and so it was great fun. Loved it. Loved all seeing all the people move through there, and just there's something about the Olympics that every 4 years when they show up, it just kind of sucks me into it, and I just love to watch. However, because it's the Olympics, you watch stuff that you might not normally watch, and so I have found myself waiting for track to start watching stuff that I never thought in a million years I would watch by way of sport. I mean, I watched fencing the other night, and I thought, okay, well, that's all right. And rugby, which is usually not something I usually stop on ESPN 18, or wherever I am, you know, kind of going up and down the dial. But I watch that, and so finally when track started, I kind of got to my sweet spot so I could watch and see what was going on. But you may not be aware that there have been some strange sports in the Olympics through the years. For example, in 1900, croquet was an Olympic sport. And croquet only lasted one Olympiad, and only one country participated, and only one country won. Croquet was won by the French national team. They were the only two teams that put the only country to put two teams in, so it was going to be the French from the beginning. Tug of war used to be an Olympic event. In 1900, again, tug of war was an Olympic event. In 1920, they introduced an event that didn't last long. It was called horse vaulting. Now, if you've ever watched gymnastics, if you've watched them jump across a vaulting horse, they did it on a live horse. Yeah, they put them in the equestrian ring, they'd ride on the back of a live horse, and then they would have to jump barriers as they were riding the horse and then land back on the horse successfully. It didn't last long, but again, boy, that'd been fun. There was another one called ski-joring. Now, this was a Winter Olympic sport, And what would happen is that they would put a horse out on a frozen lake, tie a rope to that horse, and then they would pull someone on a pair of skis on a race course around the frozen lake. It ended up with horses sliding sideways and skiers sliding off. It didn't last, but ski joring, again, was a suggested sport. And then one that gave me hope, though, that also tapped out in the mid-1900s, was called the plunge for distance. And basically, the plunge for distance would take place in an Olympic swimming pool, but what you would do is you basically would stand on the edge and then belly flop into the water, face down, and float forward. And you float as long as you could hold your breath, and then when you quit holding your breath and you raised your head up, that would be the distance you floated. It was the plunge for distance. Now, there's not a lot of skill involved in that, and so for a lot of us in the room, it gives us hope we could do that today. But again, strange things. You watch stuff that you don't normally get to see. This morning, we're going to talk about strange sights and sounds that you find in the jungle. The series that we're in the midst of has been a series that we've been talking about the reality of life and that the fact that we are all busy kind of navigating this jungle called life, and it gets a little crazy. But it's safe to say that sometimes life is a jungle. It's not always easy. And we're in the midst of it, and we're trying to figure out how to get there and how to survive it. And so I promised you that when we moved into it, we would look at some passages of Scripture that while we weren't going to plow any new theological ground, we certainly would make some practical application for these passages and talk about how they impact us in the here and now, how they could be helpful to us now. And so today, we're going to be in Daniel 5. Now, if you would grant me just the freedom this morning, instead of reading the verses, I'm going to tell you the story in just a couple seconds because we knew that we had a lot of stuff that we were cramming into this morning. And so I'm going to summarize the story for you and kind of walk you through it. But you can read it later. It's in Daniel 5. And everything I'm going to tell you is biblical, so don't have to worry about that. But we've been using also the Jungle Cruise as kind of our backdrop for what we're talking about. The Jungle Cruise movie opened this past week. There was a phrase in there that I thought was interesting. Dwayne Johnson's character said this. He said, "Know this about the jungle. Everything wants to kill you and can." His summary statement about what was lurking in the jungle I thought was profound. Because the jungle's tough. And you know as well as I do that life is tough. And as we're navigating life, sometimes it can get really tricky and a little bit crazy. Back in the day when the Jungle Cruise opened in 1955 at Disneyland, they only had two boats running on opening day. There were two boats. They ran hard all day. That was the Congo Queen and the Ganges Gal. And those were the boats that ran through the Jungle Cruise. But what the Jungle Cruise was then is not what it is now. The Jungle Cruise, when it opened at Disneyland, was designed, as we told you a couple weeks ago, after the True Life Adventures. And it was a serious look at animals and wildlife and things that you might find in the jungle. It was designed to be almost educational. They had all sorts of trouble with it. They were trying animatronics for the first time. The hydraulics weren't working. They were on tracks in the water. It didn't work well. Walt was so frustrated at one point, he said, "You know," he goes, "I wouldn't know this thing worked if I hadn't seen it on TV." It worked on TV, and that was about it. But one day was a pivotal day in the life of Walt Disney and also in Disneyland, as he was about 10 feet behind a couple that were moving through with their children, and the child said to the mom, "I want to ride the Jungle Cruise." And the mom responded, "No, we've already done that. You know what that's like. It's no different now." And in that moment, Walt Disney knew that if they didn't do something to the attraction, all of the attractions, to make them fresh and constantly changing, that he would lose his audience. That's why he said, "Disneyland will never be completed as long as there's imagination." And immediately he retooled, he went back to his studio, he pulled one of his 9 old men, one of the animators who did such, he was a gag man, they called him, and he did gags in the cartoon features that were part of the Disney legacy. His name is Mark Davis. And they told Mark, they said, "We want you to fix a Jungle Cruise." And Mark Davis said, "What do you mean fix a Jungle Cruise?" He said, "Make the Jungle Cruise better." And so Mark Davis went and he rode the Jungle Cruise over and over again, and he tried to figure out the timing of the boats and what scenes guests would have the most time to look at and how he could take those scenes and write a story that would somehow weave through this adventure through the jungle. So he was the one that added the humorous scenes, like all those guys running up the pole getting chased by the rhino, or they'll get the point in the end, that kind of thing. That was his creation. And so he went back and he started cartooning out all of these scenes that would become part of what we know today as the Jungle Cruise. And then when he was done, he told Walt, he said, "Walt, I've changed the whole thing, but here's what you have to know. It's got to be funny." And so Walt immediately moved off of his true life adventure idea, and they wrote these comedy scripts that would become the stuff that they would use in the Jungle Cruise, and it became the Jungle Cruise that we know today. And it would take you on this incredible voyage where you would see things, but it had to change and had to adapt so it would be funny. And we already talked about it last week. The skipper makes all the difference. If you have a great skipper, it's a great cruise. If you don't, the cruise stinks. And you see things, they point out things, you always notice things that maybe you hadn't seen before. It's just a part of the adventure. But there's a lot of stuff to notice and a lot of detail that sometimes you miss in the ride and the attraction. For Mark Davis, he wanted to make sure he created an attraction that people would remember. And Mark Davis, when he was said and done, when he looked at it, he said, "Well, I can guarantee you this, they've never seen a jungle like this before." And he was right. What he created was not really the jungle, but it was an idea, a fanciful idea of what it was like to survive in the jungle. I want you to know that there are some moments in our life today when you look at the things that are going on in the world and you think about the news that you hear and you think about some of the stuff that every once in a while you just go, "Yeah, I've never heard anything like this before. This is one of the craziest times I've ever lived in. I can't imagine this is going on. Who'd have thought?" And you think and you summarize the world that way and you begin thinking, how am I going to navigate this? Because there's some strange things that are going on in the world around us. Well, strange things are a part of our life. And believe it or not, they're a way of life. And it ought not to surprise you. The passage we're going to look at today in Daniel 5 comes out of a book that's known for prophecy. And you might know the story of Daniel in the lion's den. You might be familiar with that if you've been around church a long time. This is not that story. But in Daniel chapter 5, we pick up on a story that takes place after the death of King Nebuchadnezzar. King Nebuchadnezzar ruled in Babylon, just so you know, for 43 years. After he died, there was a rapid succession of rulers, each one eliminated by assassination. And eventually, 10 years later, Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, Belshazzar, took the throne of the kingdom. Now, Belshazzar found himself in a situation where one day a hostile army from Persia surrounded the city. And King Belshazzar wanted to calm the people and let them know that they were invincible and there was nothing to worry about. So he invited 1,000 nobles to come to the palace for a party while there was an invading army surrounding the city. He was so confident in their ability to win. He was so confident in their strength that he knew that it was not going to be anything to worry about. And so as 1,000 nobles gathered together, they began to have a party, and they began to take the vessels that they had gotten out of the temple of God, and they began to drink wine from the gold and silver cups that had been a part of the temple in Jerusalem. And he had so devalued temple worship that these things now were just part of the possessions of the new king. While the party is going on, there is an event that happens that is definitely in the category of a strange thing. A hand appears on the wall next to a lampstand. And when I say a hand, I mean a hand. Someone reads this passage, they say, "Well, in Hebrew is the literal translation hand." Yes. The passage means there is a hand that shows up on a wall. And not just shows up on the wall, but begins writing words on the wall, and the king sees it. The phrase, "the writing on the wall," emerges from this particular moment. You say, "Well, what kind of hand was it?" It was a hand. Five fingers, more than likely. Maybe six, don't know, didn't see it. Five. Five fingers. Begins writing, and it is probably the closest thing that you and I have to understanding this is the Addams Family. That hand that just, with no body. Very Halloweenish, this thing is. And it writes on the wall, and as you might imagine, it gets Belshazzar's attention. The king is terrified. The Bible talks about it. He goes pale. He goes weak. He feels like he wants to pass out. He puts out a proclamation and he says, "Whoever can tell me what those words on the wall mean, I will make the third most powerful person in the kingdom." And his counselors come and they read the wall, but they don't know what the words mean. They can't interpret what's going on there. And so if you step back for just a moment, you have to say this is just an unusual story. Usually, in the Bible, a hand doesn't just randomly show up and write on the wall. Most of you in this room have never had that experience in your own home. But in this particular case, it's exactly what happened. And so as they come and they go, no one can interpret it. The king grows more upset. And the queen finally says, look, I know a guy. I remember there's this guy who for your father was an advisor, and your father had made him one of the heads of this nation. His name is Daniel. He has the spirit of his God in him, and he can interpret what's on the wall. And so they sent for Daniel, and Daniel said, I'll do my best here, and if God lets me know what it means, I will be happy to tell you. I don't want your riches. I don't need anything from you. But he comes in, and he looks, and then he looks back at the king, and let me paraphrase this a little bit, but he says, the Most High gave your grandfather Nebuchadnezzar sovereignty, greatness, glory, and splendor. But that same God humbled him when he became arrogant. And you know his story. And yet here you are today, full of pride. And then Daniel does the most amazing thing. He calls him out. He says, right now you're using the cup from the temple for your drunken bash. And you've asked me to interpret what's written on the wall. And then Daniel reads it. Mene, mene, tekel, peres. Translated, that means numbered, numbered, weighed, and divided. In other words, God has numbered the days of your reign and brought them to an end because you have been weighed on his scales and found lacking. Therefore, your kingdom will be divided and given to the Medes and Persians. And although Daniel resisted, the king rewarded him. But that night, as Belshazzar was distracted by the banquet, the Medes and the Persians broke into the city. And history tells us that the way they did it is that they diverted the Euphrates River that normally flowed through the city. And then they unlocked the huge bronze gates that guarded the river channel, and they actually came through the riverbed into the city. And they overtook the kingdom, all while the party was going on. And it fulfilled the prophecy that had happened years ago, that had been told and had not been heeded, had not been paid attention to. They missed the writing on the wall, if you will. And I was thinking about the strange sights and the sounds that we talk about in the jungle and how tough it is sometimes to navigate. It brought me to a couple of questions that really have impact for you and for me. For example, if God counted the days of your life right now, would he conclude that the days of your life have been worthwhile? In other words, are you maximizing the moments that God gives you and are you living them to the fullest for him? If God were to settle your account right now, how would that work? Would you have done what you needed to do? Would you have been what you needed to be? Would you be living your life focused on him and fulfilling the purpose that he created you for? Or are you busy being distracted by other things and not liking where you are and not liking what's happening around you? What would your life be like? Another question is, if God weighed the contents of your heart, what would he find of value? In other words, what matters most to you? What drives you? What gets you moving? What gets you to be what you were created to be? What gets you to that place that you need to be? Because see, for us, life really is a jungle. We have to live and navigate this world around us. It's the place that God has placed us. Now, we can gripe about the place that he's placed us. You can do that all day long, but you know what? That doesn't change your place. So when the griping is done, the living begins, and then you have to decide, am I going to be serious about being who I am created to be in this jungle that God has placed me? Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to have a lightweight legacy like King Belshazzar had. And you don't want to be a lightweight and found wanting or lacking when God says it's time to balance the books. You want to make sure that you're living the life that you were created to live. And here's why. Because we really do live in a jungle. And no matter how powerful we think we are, no matter how important we think we are, no matter how good we think we are, God is more powerful, He knows better, and He is bigger, and He has a plan for your life. And you have to decide whether or not you're going to live and flesh out that plan. But also, as much as we complain about the jungle that we're placed in sometimes, that is the jungle that God has called you to travel. He's called you to explore. He's called you to discover and find those things that He has placed in that adventure for you. So yes, life is a jungle. And sometimes it's hard to understand what's going on. You ever tried to understand something and your conclusion was, that's just crazy? You ever had somebody say something to you and when they were done, you just go, what you said, that was crazy. You thought to yourself, that's crazy. I don't know what they're talking about. Well, let me let you in on a secret. If you begin to understand something that's crazy, you're now crazy. The fact that you can't understand crazy is a good sign. The moment that you step into that crazy room and you begin to understand it, you have taken a significant step toward being crazy yourself. And so here's what I know. There's going to be a lot of stuff that goes on in the world around us that you're just not going to understand. And when you run it through the filter that God has placed within you and that filter that God has placed on your heart of following Him, there's going to be some stuff that just doesn't make sense to you. There's going to be some stuff that sometimes you're going to struggle with. And that's okay. That's nothing to panic over. That's part of living in the jungle. But you have to understand that you have a job to do. And your job is not to complain about the vine. But your job is to navigate the jungle and get the moments out of it that God has placed around you so that you can, one, successfully travel it, so when it's all said and done and God balances the books, that you're not found lacking or you're not a lightweight. But then on top of that, you're called to bring clarity and truth through love to those who are trying to navigate the jungle as well. Because as frustrated as you might be with the jungle that seems to be unfolding around us sometimes, and as tough as life can be sometimes, you need to take heart and take courage because you know what? God has placed you there for a reason, and He's not going to let you fail. He'll get you through it if you'll be obedient and you'll trust Him. And so that's the question for you. Will you help give balance, saneness, hope, meaning, understanding, and love to a world that desperately needs truth? And if you're willing to share that, then your takeaway, the tip of the spear, if you will, that we use every week, was simply this. Learn truth and then share it with others as you love them. Learn truth and share it with others as you love them. Because you can't get around it. There's going to be some strange things that happen out there. You can't avoid it. Things are going to be weird. You can't ignore it because it looks so goofy sometimes. But at the end of the day, the jungle is a place that God has placed you, and you're not there by accident, and you're not there alone. And He'll be with you each step of the way. Would you bow your heads and hearts? Let's pray for just a moment. God, we recognize the fact that we do live in a jungle, and there's a lot of strange sights and sounds that sometimes surround us. Sometimes it gets a little overwhelming. Sometimes we find ourselves fearful, and sometimes we feel very much alone. But yet in the midst of it all, passages like this remind us that You are always able to find where we are and speak a language that we understand and can show us what we need to see, what we need to know, and what we need to share. And so, God, because of that, then we have a purpose. We have a role. We have a responsibility in this world that we find ourselves in. And as wild as the jungle might be, we are called to be people that help not only navigate it successfully ourselves, but help others find that path that they need at times when it seems so overwhelming. There are some, maybe in this room, maybe watching online, who have never come to that moment where they've made the decision to believe, trust, and follow you. And so, Lord, here and now, in this moment, I pray that you would just lay upon their heart to pray, Lord Jesus, I love you. And I can't make it on my own. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. But I believe that you love me and that you died for me and you've called me to follow you. You've chosen me. And so because of that, I will live my life for you and follow you wherever you call me. Lord, anyone who prayed that prayer or something similar, Lord, before they would leave this place this morning, I pray that they would take a worship flyer and give us their name, put it in the giving kiosk on the way out the door. That they would stop the feed that they're watching right now and just send us an email and say, that's the decision I want to make. I want to follow Jesus. And by doing so, it would give us a chance to come alongside and chat with them, talk with them, tell them what needs to happen next. But Lord, for others in this room, Lord, we're following, but sometimes we get caught and twisted and we're tripping sometimes over all that underbrush that we have to struggle through. Help us not to lose heart. Help us to keep listening. Help us to keep looking. And recognize that some of those strange sounds and sights that are so weird to us, that they don't surprise you at all. And somewhere in the midst of it all, you've got something that you want us to see, something you want us to hear, and most importantly, something you want us to do. That is our prayer, our hope this day. In Jesus' name, amen.
Into marvelous light I'm run, out of darkness, out of shame. By the cross, you are the truth, you are the light. Would you stand and sing with us? Here we go. You ready? Say, well, I once was
fatherless, a stranger.
Heart. Here we go. Two, ready, sing.
My dead heart now is beating. My deepest stains now clean. Your breath fills up my lungs. Now I'm free. Now I'm free. Sin has lost its power. Death has lost its sting. From out of darkness, out of shame.
Lift my hands and spin around. See the light that I found. Oh, the marvelous light, the marvelous light. Lift my hand and spin around. See the light that I found. Oh, the marvelous light, the marvelous light. Sing it loud. You would turn and face the door and into marvelous light run into your week. You're dismissed. By the cross, you are the truth. You are the life.